Cruz family and Beck calling down Lee's to save the campaign and America. Today is where Trump and Cruz enter the Valley of Vision, the Valley of Decision in Indiana, to see who was most favored by the fates, God, or an unfeeling universe. Brother Rafael Cruz and Mormon super prophet Glenn Beck imprecate and call down and supplicate and get on their knees for help from above while demanding sackcloth, ashes, prayer, and fasting. Teddy Bear, that's B-A-R-E, is preparing his apocalyptic-proof survival bunker. Seriously, as Trump surges ahead in polls in Indiana and a massive 35-point lead in Cali, even the hyper-combat disconnected from reality, Cruz can see it's time to fold the circus tent up for another campaign. Amazingly, this isn't the only race Trump is thriving in and has jumped ahead. Yes, according to Rasmussen polls, he's now ahead of Hillary 41% to 39%. This should give fodder to all the know-it-alls whom Trump simply could not beat America's Dragon Lady. And the race hasn't even started yet. Nothing beats momentum and a sense of inevitability in politics. Hillow beans must feel like Sisyphus continually pulling or pushing a stone up the hill all day long, only to have it roll over her at dusk. So after tomorrow, we will probably be down to a two-man race, bearing in mind Hillary's manful attitude and wardrobe. So what happens next? Obviously, a lot of reloading, but not too much changing, except a few more insults traded between the two New Yorkers. In the consolation race, Trump was asked if Cruz could make it in his Supreme Court. The Donald did not know about his temperament to be able to get along with the other justice. But then again, isn't the SCOTUS Supreme Court of the United States the very place where brilliant Ivy make serious defense of their beliefs in the name of the country? In other words, it's exactly where we need Cruz most, fighting for our core constitutional beliefs and making everybody hate his guts. I could see a new show coming out of that. Live from D.C., everybody hates Teddy. Now, if the nasty evangelical dominionist Teddy Bear, B-A-R-E, could only get appointed, because everybody who would appoint him hates us, so maybe that would be a good place to send him outside of the Senate. Good morning at 6:09, and it's the 3rd of May. And, it seems a little bit warmer going off my instincts here, which are often wrong. It's warmer than yesterday, but it's, it was quite warmer, 53 degrees right now. I think it was 38 yesterday at the same time. All right, we've got this race coming up with. Yes, we got this race coming up with Cruz and Trump. I mean, Kasich is really, do you know Kasich's own people are just wish he would drop out? They voted for him president. Ohio voters want Kasich to drop it, get out, grow up. I mean, just knock it off. Stop acting special. There's no way you could win. Well, if he stays in the race, I mean, I don't know. What does he have, 150 delegates? I mean, he could offer those up to Donald. I mean, if two people come together, this is one thing I don't know. If two people come together, two candidates, if, for example, Super Mario Brothers, Marco Rubio, if he was to join as the vice president of Trump, could he just give him his 300 delegates? I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably a little more complicated than that, just like everything else. But, all right, so we've got Tuesday tonight. Tonight should be the night, and the way that the polling is going, the national polls are heating up for Trump. So this should be the night when Trump is knocked out. Not Trump, but Cruz. What am I saying? I'm trying to get this stupid CNN clip to play here for you. But, I mean, you know, it's if he's up 35 points in California, then that means he gets probably more than 100 votes out of California, then it's pretty much all over, because then he's definitely going to get all of the points out of the delegates out of New Jersey, which is something like 50. And then Indiana, he is ahead. The last polls that we have out of Indiana say that basically the Donald's ahead enough to think that he's going to win. Walt Rubel coming in. Walt is going to be coming in at the turn of the hour. So, all right. So let me go over some of the headlines. Puerto Rico's debt crisis deepens as government misses payment. And they owe, I think, $500 million. Obama deportations down, deportations down 43%. Panama is about to transfer 3,000 U.S.-bound Cuban migrants to Mexico. This president is doing. This president is so. You know, I mean, we're lucky the president never figured out that much more about his job than he has to learn how to deal with. From what I understand from this book, written by Klein, the amateur, Obama, when he got into office, had such enthusiastic responses to his speeches that he thought that leadership and giving a speech on something, and then people would hear the speech and assemble what the policy implications were out of it or whatever, and would kind of just co-create an army of people to carry out the speech, which is pathological. I mean, so... I mean, to this day, I don't get the sense that Obama really understands the president like he could, and he's most of the work to other people, but he doesn't. May. All right, let's get some Indiana polling here for you before we move into anything else and some of the other stuff in the show. Yeah, I mean, so. I don't know. I just think he's out, you know? All right. So Donald Trump leading Cruz 4 days ago, 1 week ago. I mean, he's just got a little bit of a persistent lead that has, actually turned into, according to one poll, 15 points. So, and all right, so here we go. Oh, anyway, I have a problem here as usual, but let me see what I can. Let's just take a break here, and I'll reload some of these clips for you. And I got a little dedication here to Boy Cruz. So Cruz's dad gets up and he calls down and says, we need to vote for Cruz, because if you follow the Bible, that's what do. A statement that I would take some issue with. I mean, all right, so here we go. Here we go. This is a dedication to Teddy. You may remember. Indiana wants me. Famous Canadian, well, almost famous Canadian. 16th Kelly O'Connell Show. Las Cruces, 1450 KB, 5-3-1450. We'll be back.
Indiana wants me.
right. So getting onto the polls here. And, you know, there is just a lot of there is a lot of feeling out there from people that think that basically looking for the best clip here for you, that if Trump takes out Indiana, then the whole thing is over. I mean, he's up 35 points in California, and I think that Trump has kind of lost his Cruz's. I keep calling Trump Cruz. He's lost his edge in terms of this whole thing. And I was reading some analysis last night, and people were saying that basically, when Cruz lost his edge is when he joined in with the mainstream party, because he saw his opportunity to put in get a jump on Trump, and then, you know, kind of ride it out. And people wanted, well, what they liked about Cruz is he was an outsider, and he turns into an insider. But here's a little bit on Trump and the nomination.
All eyes on Indiana.
It really has all come down to Indiana. He could have this nomination wrapped up.
A lot of people are saying if Donald Trump gets the most votes in Indiana, he's pretty much won the nomination, including Trump himself.
If we win Indiana, it's over, okay?
So here's the math behind that claim. Trump currently has 997 delegates.
Trump actually has, and I mean, this was just posted today, but Trump has 1,009, something like that, maybe like 12 more delegates.
Compared to Ted Cruz's 566. Republicans need 1,237 delegates to win the nomination. In Indiana, winner take most states. So of the 57 delegates the state has to offer, Trump is expected to get as many as 54 delegates on Tuesday. That would put Trump at 1,051 delegates, just 186 short of the nomination. And he's polling well enough in most of the remaining states that unless there's a major upset, the nomination is probably his. So what major upset could ruin his chances? California. The state has so many delegates, 172, that if Trump doesn't win it, that would probably throw the GOP into a contested convention. But that doesn't seem likely. According to Real Clear Politics, Trump is averaging 17 points above Cruz in California. For Newsy, I'm Kate Griffin.
He's up by 35. What are they talking about here? All right, here's a little bit more.
Down to the Hoosier state in less than 24 hours, Indiana voters heading to the polls in a primary that could be make or break for candidate Ted Cruz. 57 Republican delegates up for grabs. This as a new NBC Wall Street Journal poll shows frontrunner Donald Trump up by a commanding 15 points over the Texas senator. On Friday, Cruz declared the nomination will be decided in Indiana. But by Sunday, he had changed his tune a bit. He appeared, Senator Cruz, on Fox News Sunday saying this.
I agree that Indiana is incredibly important. I think regardless of what happens in Indiana, Donald Trump is not getting to 1237. No one's getting to 1237. We're headed to a contested convention. I'm going to have a ton of delegates at that convention. Donald's going to have a ton of delegates.
But if he beats you,
and it's going to be a battle to see who can earn a majority. Of course not.
Meantime, Donald Trump telling a boisterous crowd on Sunday that he can wrap up the nomination with a win tomorrow, allowing him to turn his attention to bigger things.
If we win Indiana, it's over, okay?
All right, so fair enough on that. Now, how is he doing nationally? He's up by 35 points in California right now, 34 technically. How is he doing, though, in nationally? Well, if you listen to the opening monologue, he's up by 2, according to Rasmussen. Rasmussen is one of the best established and most respected polls out there, polling groups. And if he's up by 2, and that's exactly, I hate to say I told you so, but I initially, as you recall, said don't write Donald Trump off. There's something different about him that people like. And now when Trump gets in front of the national microphones against Hillary, Hillary is a known quantity. She's not going to pick up a lot more support because there's a lot of stuff that people don't like about her. But I think people are still kind of getting informed and getting to know Trump. And frankly, his numbers, I think, could go up. Anyway, here's a little bit on his national Donald Trump's lead continues to grow nationally poll. And this is from NBC News.
Hillary Clinton looking to lock down big wins in Indiana today and make their path to the nomination unstoppable. We'll begin our Decision 2016 coverage this morning with NBC national correspondent Peter Alexander. He's in Indianapolis this morning. Peter, good morning.
Hey, Savannah, good morning to you. A steady stream.
Just to let you know, this is from this morning.
The voters arriving here early this morning in Indiana. The polls opened a short time ago. Ted Cruz in this state got the one-on-one matchup that he wanted with Donald Trump. But Trump right now has a big lead, looking for his seventh straight win. And if our numbers hold by this time tomorrow, the general election matchup could be all but set. Donald Trump rallying the faithful near Notre Dame, looking to rack up a decisive win.
Indiana's becoming very important.
It's called Importantville.
Already, many Americans are turning their attention to the fall. New this morning, the latest NBC News SurveyMonkey online poll shows Trump narrowing the gap with Hillary Clinton, now trailing her by 6 points. Nearly 20% of voters still undecided. Despite charges of sexism, Trump's revisiting his rant against Clinton for shouting at her events.
Now, if she was a man, I could say it. But as a woman, ladies, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to say it. She was screaming at the teleprompter, but I will not say it, okay?
Facing a do-or-die here in Indiana, Cruz is running into a wall of opposition.
And a question that everyone here should ask.
Are you Canadian?
Do you want your
Canadian? Are you Canadian?
Confronting Trump supporters.
In line 10!
Well, sir, you know, actually...
Down ISIS! Don't take down the whole...
People don't just bring the
Cruz insists, win or lose, Indiana's not his last stand, with NBC's Hallie Jackson.
We are in for the distance. We are competing. As long as we have a viable path to victory, I am in to the end.
What is a viable path? What does that mean?
Nobody is going to get to 1236.
Still, there have been missteps. 83% of Americans say Cruz picked Carly Fiorina as his running mate simply to revitalize his campaign.
I thought he picked her just because she was so ugly and he felt sorry for her.
Senator now getting knocked after Fiorina recently fell off stage.
Cruz didn't do anything.
This is the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. There's a clip of Carly Fiorina standing on the stage, and she's in this group of people, and you can't see the stage. You just see her head is up above these people, and she's kind of like taking little steps, and all of a sudden she just disappears. She goes straight down. Cruz and his wife come out, and his wife, like, I think realizes that she's fallen down. I don't know if Ted didn't see her go down or just decided that he had better things to do, but it was hilarious. I mean, he did not come over and pull her off the ground.
Even I would have helped her, okay?
Meanwhile, new evidence how Democratic congressional candidates may attack their Republican opponents this fall by linking them to Trump's words.
She ate like a pig.
I'd look her right in that fat, ugly face of hers.
Even President Obama now going after the Republican frontrunner in a new interview with a New Hampshire local TV station.
He is not somebody who, even within the Republican Party, can be considered as equipped to deal with the problems of this office.
For Obama to say somebody else is not ready for office, oh my gosh. I'm just trying to think of... That's like Ronald McDonald telling somebody else they eat too much fast food.
For months, Donald Trump's critics said that he had a ceiling, but he's blasted through it again. Our new SurveyMonkey poll showing him at 56% support nationwide among Republicans. That spike, another sign that many traditional Republicans are beginning to rally together behind the front runner. Savannah and Matt.
All right, so it's going to be a heck of a battle. People like it when they hear him call Rosie O'Donnell a fat pig. I mean, why wouldn't they? You know what I mean? So I don't know what else to say about that. Let's take a little break here and do you want more Indiana Wants Me? Maybe you do. Let me play a little more for you. This story about a guy that his girlfriend was insulted, so he did the only logical thing and killed the guy that insulted her. We'll be right back. 629 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450. We'll be right back with more on the Cruz cult.
Lord, I can't go back there. I'm shy of you.
to talk to. If a man ever needed dying, he did. No one has the right to say what he said about you. And it's so cold and lonely here without you.
All right, so I've got this story. Well, you know that Ted Cruz's dad is a minister, and so and there's this weird story out there. He grew up in Cuba, and he was trying to multitask here. Pardon me. There's people claiming he was involved in JFK's assassination, but anyway, he's calling on people to vote for his son. And I mean, you know what? I don't really blame him for this. And he has this interview and he basically tells a bit about, and the reason I'm not playing this is because it's for some reason, the reason is my computer sucks, but it's not really playing. But he's saying to vote for his son. Or basically, he's implying to vote for his son because people are supposed to follow God's commands, even in the voting booth. And I mean, I don't have a problem with that. That is a statement because number one, he's got a right to say whatever he wants, free speech. Number two, of course, he's going to want his son to be elected and people to vote for him. He believes in his son. Number three. He's a Christian and that makes perfect sense. And I think there would be we'd have a lot better country if you had that as a standard, because there's a lot of idiots out there getting voted into office and people don't even really know what they stand for. That doesn't really mean that I buy into dominionism, which is a completely different, it's all right. So, you know, the way the liberals took over government was by basically taking over the law. Liberalism in the country, there's like 2-to-1 conservatives to liberals, but liberals have had over the last decades, the last 100 years or whatever, a large number of successes that have helped nail down liberal ideas to the point where people get converted through the law. They get converted through other people's opinions, but they get converted through the law. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that are conservative, or at least a lot of people in the middle or on the right, who, if you ask them what they thought about gay marriage, they would say, well, you know, live and let live. Yes, they have a right to be married. So there's conversion through the law. But liberals can't really make it on their own without that, because there's not enough natural support for the ideas. And they know that. So when the Bolsheviks took over in Russia, for example, they were 5% 1/20 of 1%. That's a tiny, teeny, tiny minority. And so they had to come into power. You could almost argue, although I wouldn't personally do this because I don't believe in it, but that they had to have a tyranny just to stay in control because their ideas were in such a minority. But anyway, so you've got this and I can't find this clip anywhere else, but it's just a basic, it's kind of interesting when he talks about how he was converted and he was working in the oil industry and he was doing a lot of business in bars and so down in Texas, and that he had become an alcoholic, and he was, you know, he's very, very secular minded and everything. He became converted, but he does call out for, you know, he does call out for people to vote for his son. So, all right. So I actually came up with, I'll probably come up with the 10th one by the end of it, but 10 reasons for Christians not to support Cruz, because I keep hearing all these people that are Christians saying, we got to support him. He's the only way forward. Donald Trump's a liberal. Ted Cruz is a conservative. He's fought and fought for conservatism. Number one, he lies. 10 reasons not to support Cruz. And Satan is the father of lies. Number two, he's very rude, apparently. Number three, his colleagues hate him. See number two. He became mainstream GOP when he thought he could win. All right, I just came up with a 10th one. So he became mainstream GOP when he thought he could win, which turned a lot of people off. Five, he's an egomaniac or a narcissist. Six, his dad and Glenn Beck think he's a messiah. Seven, he doesn't stand up to Mormonism. He has Glenn Beck out there, and he doesn't point out the differences between his belief in Mormonism. Eight, funded by only three guys. Now, there's this great story out there that Cruz was only supported by three big money guys, and one of them had $10 million, and he's one of Cruz's best friends. He's only spent $1 million of this, and he is not telling Cruz what he's going to do with the other $9 million. It's too late now. Number nine, going off his wife's prophecy. His wife had the prophecy that said that he should run, and now he's down in the polls to Hillary. He can't beat Hillary. And there was another one that came to mind too. But anyway, so all right, so there's your 10 reasons. I mean, the main reason is the GOP needs to try to get the White House, and it doesn't seem like Cruz is that strong. And yes, he's interesting to listen to. I'll give you that. He could argue. I could see the guy arguing with a telephone pole, but I mean, he would argue with anybody, and he's got a compelling way of presenting himself. He doesn't get angry in these debates, but I just find it interesting that the stuff that you would, I mean, if you think of somebody who's like a kind of a prophetic type of an individual, you wouldn't think that their wife was giving them the prophecy. You know, I'm not saying that's not possible. What's wrong with just running and saying, I'm a Christian, the country sucks, the country, you know, this country is very much non-Christian, I'm going to run. Why does his wife have to come up with a prophecy? But anyway, I don't want to cut his wife out of the fat of the land here, but he's also, I mean, and here's the thing that, you know, the people that have called up to worship him, basically the Donnas, et cetera, doesn't it bother you that people hate this guy's guts? Doesn't it mean something? Doesn't it mean anything to you that if you're a Ted Cruz supporter, and here's this like precious defense of him that is basically, I believe in Ted Cruz and there, people hate him. That therefore that proves that he's pure hearted. He's, you know, he stands for the right things. Everybody in Washington is evil, and he's not evil, and you can tell because all the evil people hate him. I mean, that there's like some sort of, I guarantee you, some sort of a meme like that kind of circulating in the minds of a lot of conservatives in the country. How about this? This guy is the ultimate in entitlement, because not only does he think other people owe him, he thinks God owes him. He thinks God is the main backer of his campaign because his wife told him, and that he's got this you know, really obnoxious personality in which he's a know-it-all, and he thinks he knows everything. And so they said the nightmare scenario when he was in Texas, he's working for the George W. Bush thing, and he's the solicitor general and everything, but he finds out there's a meeting and shows up. And he's not invited to the meeting. And people said when Ted Cruz showed up to a meeting, people left and the meeting shut down. That's how obnoxious he is. So this idea that he is God's anointed, And he's so pure. He's so, I mean, a lot of Christians think this, you know, which I think is a mistake. I mean, sometimes people don't like Christians because they're obnoxious. Ted Cruz, and I'm not saying all Christians are obnoxious, but I'm just saying that sometimes it's not because they're so pure hearted. And so, you know, they show everybody else off as evil. They're just obnoxious people. But anyway, Ted Cruz is clearly the you talk about the one percenters. He's 1%. Well, he's the top percentile in terms of obnoxious. He uses his calling, his belief that he's called, in a sense of entitlement that he's owed the presidency to go in. And I mean, people, the more people, this is a, just a, this is a truism. The more people get to know Ted Cruz, the more they dislike him. Why would you want that person as your president when we are in a constitutional democratic republic and getting the goodwill of people? Because he can't run it. He can't, you know, don't look at Obama's example. You can't successfully run this country as a tyranny. Therefore, you need the goodwill and the support of other people, not just the voters, but you also need the goodwill and support of your colleagues. And generally speaking, I've never really heard George W. Bush trash anybody, but he trashed Ted Cruz. He said, I just don't like the guy. So anyway, there's your 10 reasons. Now, let's take a little break here and come back and let's see, what do I want to get into here? Well, probably more of the same, because Walt Rubel is going to be coming in just a second, and we're going to switch gears. Or maybe we'll talk about the same stuff. I know he's very excited about this race. Kelly O'Connell, Indiana wants me, but Cruz can't go back there because he's hated. Cruz is hated. If you think that God called Ted Cruz, which I'm saying is in the realm of possibilities, did he call on him to lie to do that? I will ask you that 1,000 times. And then I would cite to the book of Genesis and the story of between Esau and his brother. Is it Jacob? Jacob and Esau? Jacob had a lot of problems with Esau because he was a liar. And I think the one of the lessons out of there is that, isn't this a general lesson? If you're given something, you don't have to steal it. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to lie about it. 6:43, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And I found the texter all by its lonesome, 805-6180. There's a bunch of texts that appeared on it that I will try to get through before the end of the show. We'll be right back. All right, so we've just got a few minutes here before we turn over on the next hour and have Walt here, but I think it is a good time to. I appreciate what Ted Cruz has done because he's brought faith back in a very powerful way to politics, and I think there's something wrong. Most people, all right, here's the thing, and I'll throw this out there. I've been thinking about this a long time. Most people agree that there is something wrong with this country. Now, what it is exactly, if you're on the left or the right, you would disagree on what it was. But most people in polling, the country's on the wrong track. And I think a lot of this, I mean, a lot of it predates, obviously, Obama. But at now, I think there's a sense that the person who's running our country doesn't like us and is doing what he can to sabotage us. That is a strong belief in the right and in many people in the center. I think there's Democrats that believe that because there's no credible explanation for trying to get as many illegals in as possible. I mean, shipping all these Cubans over here. What's the credible explanation for all that stuff happening? But anyway, the point is that there's something wrong with the country. People think that we used to be a better country. And if we were to go back in the past and find what we lost, I think one of the elements that you would lose that we've lost is a national sense of purpose, faith, religion, whatever you want to call it. And what takes the place of that is secularism. Now, and Frankie has kind of expressed this the other day. What takes the place of faith is secularism. The problem is that there's no one definition. I mean, there's a definition of Christianity. You might disagree on to what extent it should be brought into public life or into the politics and the political process, into law and stuff. But it's out there. It's a known quantity, known entity. Secularism, agnosticism, atheism is really the absence of something else. There's no one set formula. The most obvious example of this is there's no Ten Commandments in progressivism. And so it tends to run off of whoever is in power calling the shots. It tends to default towards tyranny. But in our country, I think it's left us with this listlessness, this lack of direction. And you have to get your ideas from somewhere. I think it is an enormous mistake to head off in the direction of agnosticism or atheism, this kind of official atheism that Frankie was bringing up, because I mean, there's no strong argument for it. Number one, number two, you have to give something else up to go there. But why would you want to cast off into the unknown and while announcing this is the way forward? This is success. This is the direction of our future. It's just has a crazy feel to it. It's, you know, like you're kind of floating out. I think that we need to go back to our standards. I mean, just give you one example, and this is something I deal with in my law practice every day. Situations where children are born out of wedlock, and then there's a fight over the children, but a lot of times the fight is over who has to pay child support, and these kids grow up, latchkey kids or what have you, a lot of times have a strong relationship with their father, and that is another thing that kind of sets up floating or with a lack of direction, a lack of conviction. And we're raising generations of these people. And if you look statistically, not having a father growing up is a total disaster. And so we've lost our way. Now you might say, well, we want to go back to something, but we don't want it to be Christianity. I mean, what set of rules or ideas or the Bible or whatever, where would you get your ideas from? What's true? What are you going to, you know? So there's a lot of things in this country that we've walked away from that are objectively true. I say that because they worked and they were efficient. I mean, this idea, one man, one woman, one family, keeping it together. Having a society where there's no definition of marriage, where the definition of relationships is so open, is leading into an extremely destructive pattern, and that's a lot of the problems here. But that's just one application of what I'm talking about. And we do need to go back, or we need to go forward, but to conserve or grab from the past some of these ideas and not say, well, it's permanently broken and, you know, nothing can fix it. I just think that, you know, if we could somehow find our way back to one mom, one dad, one family, understanding that there's tragedies and also there are imperfections in life, to the extent that some of these families will be more successful and happier than others. I think we have to try to do that, because if we don't, then almost every family, you're bringing in demons, basically, to put it, you use that in another sense. You're bringing forces into the lives of children that will, they don't ruin the life of the child. A lot of times they will bring a lifelong happiness. And we should do a show on that sometime. But anyway, take a break here. 652 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back.
It hurts to see the man that I've become. And to know I'll never see the sunshine on the land. I'll never see your smile and see your smile.
All right, so I do have a couple of texts, but anyway, I'm not going to get into those, but I'm a little bit dated, but 805-6180 to text in. But here's the thing. This is what I would throw out to people. These are the kind of conversations I find interesting. I don't find it interesting to listen to someone's sermon in a forum like this. I like sermons, but in church. But I think that we need to have a conversation, an adult conversation with each other on basically how we can fix the country. And what we need to do is have Christians and people of other faiths who strongly believe in a moral code to interact with people that are agnostics and atheists and people that are non-religious and try to figure out where we're going to get our ideas from. Because to me, it's totally irresponsible to take the position of Frankie, with all due respect, and say, we've got to get rid of religion. Why? Why do we have to go on a hunt to kill religion? In the places where this has been done, in Russia, in China, hundreds of millions of people died immediately upon doing this. So that's not the answer. And yes, I directly tied that into it. If life is not sacred, then you can take life. But we need to have a serious conversation about where we get our ideas from. And just because you're not a Christian doesn't mean that we don't take ideas out of Christianity. And I'll give you an example. Every time I've ever asked an atheist, we need to get rid of religion. Okay, so where would you get your rules from? And the person says, well, I would start with the golden rule. And I'm like, that's great, but you do know that Jesus created that idea, right? You got the franchise on it. And so there is a mindless attempt, in my opinion, to cure the ills of the nation by just throwing religion out the window. And it's counterproductive. Not only that, if you look at the fact that we're a republic, well, there's a vast impact of all of these churches out there and church councils and different bodies that have a positive impact on the country that people never talk about, local churches and then their administrative bodies and everything have a huge and a very positive impact on the society. For example, when you go down to Amador and you see all of the charitable work that's being done there, that is the Gospel Rescue Mission is a Christian undertaking. So anyway, if you didn't have that in every city, you know what I mean? So anyway, we need to move forward and to come up with new rules that work instead of these atheistic fantasies that are just just blown. They've already blown up in our face. The idea that there are no standards and therefore there's no such thing as marriage has been the biggest catastrophe in history. That's just one example. 659 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be back with Walt.
To talk to I hope this letter finds its way to you.
right, it's 7:06, and we have our favorite guest, of course. Walt Rubel is here this morning. How's it going, Walt?
Going good, thanks. Yeah, favorite. That's of course. I'm trying to think of the other weekly guests who I'm up against, but I'll take it.
You don't want me to do that analysis.
Yeah.
So how's it going, man?
No, it's good. We're at the end of our candidate interviews. We've started running the endorsements, and we're going to have stories coming out every day for the next week. So always happy when that process is over. You know, I always look forward to meeting the new candidates, and there were a lot of new ones this year. But at the same time, you know, it's stressful, and it adds a new task or an additional task to the day, and so. Glad when it's over, and we start voting a week from Tuesday locally, so that'll be a good thing.
Wow, that's coming right up. I got to get some of these candidates on here.
Yeah, early voting, the election itself isn't until June, but we start a month early, and I always vote early. Sometimes I regret it. I did regret it actually last time in the city election. I won't say who, but after meeting the person who I voted against, and that was the last of the forums that we held, I had to change that vote. I was happy that the person I voted for did win by one vote, like I said, early voting starts a week from Tuesday, and some important elections this year.
Such as?
Well, the thing that I think is interesting is that for all of the turmoil and all of the controversy, and all of the passionate desire for change, especially expressed on the right in terms of the county and county government, there are three seats up this year, and Republicans are only fielding candidates in two of the three.
The GOP is broken.
Well, yes. I mean, you can't complain if you're not. David Garcia, the incumbent in District 2, I assume is going to get reelected. If he doesn't, it'll be Mr. Gonzalez. The former mayor of Anthony. Either way, it's going to be a liberal Democrat. And you can't complain about that because you didn't put anybody up to run against him.
Well, like I've said this on the show so many times, the GOP's never contacted me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay. That tells you a lot right there.
I mean, I've had, obviously, Republicans come on my show.
Individually on their own, though. Your point is there's never been a coordinated effort like, obviously, there should be. You are, I think it's fair to say, the conservative voice, the certainly if I were a Republican candidate or if I were the head of the local Republican GOP, I would want to see what kind of exposure I could get.
Let's have lunch kind of a thing. But
sure.
I at this point I am just a voice crying in the wilderness, Walt.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll listen. Maybe they'll wake up. Maybe it's too early. They're sleeping. Maybe all this is happening.
Are GOP members lazy?
I I'm not going to go there. And I'll admit that, District 2, that's the South County.
Yeah.
That's a tough place.
So what?
Exactly. Thank you.
Who cares if it's tough?
That's
people's,
right.
People's reputations are built out of tough fights. I mean, cakewalk means nothing.
That's right. Thank you. I completely agree. The good news, though, is in the other two races, I think there are some strong candidates.
Craig and Kim Hakes.
That is in District 5. That's right. Craig Buckingham, who ran for sheriff. I think most people remember him.
And did very well.
He did. There were, I think, four or five people on the Republican side. Maybe not quite that many. But he won the Republican primary and gave Kiki a good race.
He gave him a great,
just much better funded.
Great race. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Good morning. It's Karen.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Walt, the gentleman running against Mr. Garcia.
Yes.
The city council seat or the county commission. Isn't he the one when Anthony first got elected the first mayor?
That's
isn't
correct.
Isn't he the guy that said would not call gang members? He called them the unfortunate one. And this was like right after that poor young guy, the 18-year-old, was sleeping in the rest stop there at Anthony, and they shot him in the head.
I had forgotten all about that.
And they burned him up. They chopped him in pieces and burned whatever they did to him.
I'd forgotten about that. But yes, it's the same gentleman.
That's him.
There is this weird, I just got to squeeze this in here. There is this weird idea out there that if you don't, it's like, what is they called? Semiotics, this study of names. If you don't use the bad name of something, then people won't get mad at you. I mean, this is crazy.
Well, I hope, Walt, when you do the candidate interviews, that you ask him about that, because that was the most outrageous comment. And I remember, because you guys had a big article because you were interviewing him, and it was a front page story. And I remember the family commenting on that response from him also. It was completely outrageous.
So
I hope that you follow up on that.
It's far left liberalism going off the tracks.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've already done our interview and we've already done our endorsement. It was yesterday, and it was for Mr. Garcia Dr. Garcia. But I had just forgotten about that, and certainly if I had remembered, I would have brought it up because in his defense, I'm sure he would have said that what happened to, I believe Ramirez, the young man who was killed. And that was one of the most horrible stories. He was on his way to see his sister, pulled over to spend the night in the rest stop in Anthony. Three guys, gang members, had decided that they were going to jack, I think was the word they used. The next person who drove in just happened
That's
to
right.
be him.
He was for 5 minutes before they shot him in the head.
He was unwilling to give up everything he owned, and he was shot in the head because of it.
That's right. So I hope people, when this guy has forums and he meets the public, that they call him on that repeatedly.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
And one last thing, and I'll get off the phone. But I disagree with you that if you before you gave the details of that murder, that he would have, you know, if he'd given the opportunity, you know, he would have said that with a hand in his arm. He was given that opportunity, and he called them the unfortunate ones. He refused to call them gang members. Completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to hang up.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
But I think the president does the same thing. The president refuses to use the term, you know, radical Islam.
I don't think that's the same thing. I mean, I think there's a calculation there in terms of lumping all of, the millions of people in the Muslim religion in with the handful of terrorists. And
I understand, but people do get frustrated when they hear that, you know, this guy that was shooting in Texas, he was screaming Allah Akbar, and you know, the psychiatrist shooting people, that was never Muslim terrorism. You know, people get frustrated.
Yeah, I get that.
All right. So as you were saying, go on with your,
So we were talking a little bit about District 5. Craig Buckingham, who ran against Kiki for sheriff, and he of everybody in this race, I think has come in with the most concrete platform. Three things, basically. He wants to repeal the increase in the gross receipts tax that was passed under the Hold Harmless, or the same tax that the city passed. He wants to repeal this comprehensive plan, and he wants to give the sheriff more funding. So I think of everybody, he has the clearest message. I mean, these are the three things I want to do. Kim Hakes, his opponent, is a very qualified guy. I mean, he is former bank president, came here in 1999. He was the chairman of the board for Memorial Hospital at the time that Mountain View came in. And so he sort of led them through what was a very difficult, you know, period where they had competition for the first time, and is very thoughtful on the issues. He is much more optimistic and much more hopeful about fixing things with the people who are already in place than Craig Buckingham is. He feels that, and I'm talking about Kim Hakes, feels that Julia Brown, the county manager, just hasn't been given enough freedom, or I think that's how he would put it, that the county commission hasn't allowed her the autonomy and the freedom that she needs to manage the county correctly, is his view, which I think is pretty much contrary to Buckingham. So there's a good choice there. I mean, there are two very qualified candidates who have, you know, different visions, and which is what you hope for when you have an election.
And so is Buckingham a little more conservative?
I think so. I get that sense. I think, Hakes certainly comes from the banking and the financial world. So on fiscal issues and budget issues, I'm certain, well, because we asked him, and I know for a fact, he's not comfortable at all with dipping into the reserves every year like they've been doing. So on those kinds of issues, he would be conservative. But he doesn't have the same, you know, concrete 1, 2, 3 steps. Here's what I'm going to do that Buckingham does. So that's one side. The other side, you have Wayne Hancock, who is the chairman of the commission. And I think it's fair to say, along with Billy Garrett, have been the two antagonists. I don't know if that's the right word.
You can use that word on this
show. With the sheriff department on the other side, and we saw that play out very dramatically last week with the staffing report.
What did we find out?
Well, we found out that the sheriff and his deputies and his staff members really, really don't like the county commission, and they spent a lot of time berating the county commission. They refused to participate in the staff study, which obviously made it much more difficult.
But it comes out, seems to me anyway, I don't think this is being terribly unfair, that the guy that they hired is a bit of a hack.
Well, that's Kiki's take.
Well,
but it's not the first time he's said that either. When they wanted to investigate him and Montoya, they refused to cooperate in that as well with the same excuse.
So there's no truth to it.
Well, I'm not saying that.
The guy copy and pasted a report to another.
Yeah.
That was weird. You got to.
No, that was
that.
Wrong. Boy, I'm a writer. I mean, that's beyond weird. That's wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that if he's doing, it makes it seem like it's preordained, like what the outcome was going to be.
Yeah.
And
I'm just saying, though, that this is the second time that the county has wanted to take a look at the sheriff, something in the sheriff's office, and Kiki has refused to cooperate.
All right. For the sake of the argument, why not say that Kiki smelled that and been, you know, subsequent events.
Yeah.
Seem to bear out his misgivings that this guy, to the extent that he would have any access to Kiki, would have used it against the sheriff's office, and to suggest that these guys should be on 12-hour shifts that go from day to day, that's that they're overstaffed actually on that. I mean, all of those things just don't sit very well.
Yeah, listen, this whole thing about 10-hour and 12-hour shift, I'm comfortable letting the sheriff make those decisions. I mean, that's why I think we elect the sheriff. And so if the county wants to hire their idea of an expert to come in and take a look at that and give them an advisory opinion, that's fine. I think from Kiki's point of view, if he had opened up the books, if he had given them everything they wanted to have, I think by not doing that, it makes it look like, okay, what are you trying to hide? What don't you want them to see? That's what I think. And that is, I'm certain, what a lot of people out there are saying now.
I was skeptical when I found that out, but then when I realized that this guy has a reputation of being a hatchet man or a hack, and that he always comes up with the same conclusion, and that he's copy and pasting 6 pages out of other reports, and he even admits that you know, people see him as a hatchet man, and then Ben Rossen stands up and says, I'm the one that discovered the 6 pages of plagiarism or whatever it's called.
Right.
And I think it was $50,000 that were wasted. There is this sense that Kiki, and I'm not saying Kiki's always right or I agree with everything. I'm not trying to say that at all. But that if it was, he had misgivings, it seems like those misgivings had a root.
Okay. Okay.
That's my impression.
No, and listen, I wasn't there. And so I'm getting, you know, pretty much my take on what happened at the meeting from our reporter and from other people who were there and have explained it to me. I think it's very clear that you had a number of law enforcement officers stand up and very strongly expressed their disagreement with the study and their displeasure with the county commission. And maybe that's fine. I mean, you know, certainly we've seen that, you know, with teachers when they're unhappy with the school board. I'm not sure just the fact, you know, people are saying, well, they're coming in there with guns and there were enforcement officers and I was intimidated from standing up and speaking against them. And, you know, and that's on you, I think. I mean, you know, it's a public event. If you're afraid to stand up and speak your mind, that's on you, I think.
Fair enough. Well, let's take a break. I have a classic song. Maybe you'll recognize it. Walt.
Oh, listening.
Indiana's Me.
For today's election.
Yeah.
But I can't go back there.
Yes. 7:21 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and 805-6180 for your text. And somebody texted in about Confucianism. And as the answer, like that I was saying, Walt, I was saying, I don't know if you heard it, but basically our society, most people are feeling like we're headed in the wrong direction. And then Frankie calls up and says we need to get rid of all religion. I don't think that's the answer. But if you're not an if you're an agnostic or an atheist, or you're non-religious and you're in sentiments, I think that we need to come together as a community and decide on what our rules are. For example, the way we're approaching families and having children out of wedlock, and not that any particular example of having a child out of wedlock may not have a reasonable explanation, but on a wide scale, it is creating havoc. I think we need to come together as a community and come together, build some rules up, some ideas. And, you know, the upshot is that we've got to save our kids. We have to have a society in which when children grow, they thrive. And we know fatherless houses, for example, are not those places, generally speaking.
I know we're at a break. The one thing I would say is that rules and ideas are two different things. Well, I'm comfortable with ideas. I'm less comfortable.
Well, let's come back and talk about that. And dedication here to Ted Cruz and Donald Trump in Indiana. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then I suspect we're going to have to dig into the election.
Oh, good to have to. Big night tonight. It really is.
Big night. We'll be right back with Walt Rubel.
Thank you.
All right, 727. Flying those friendly skies, 727 here with Walt Rubel, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. All right, just briefly, because I know we've got politics to talk about, our society's broken. I could use statistics to prove that, but I mean, people have a general sense that we're headed in the wrong direction. We need to, I think, reformulate some rules, and you say not rules, guidelines, or...
Well, I get nervous when people want to make new rules telling me how I need to live. You know, that always makes me nervous.
Are you libertarian in your mind?
Sure, sure.
What can we do, though, about, for example, the problem of broken homes and kids getting raised in single-parent families that leads to poverty? It leads to a real, like, a lack of a sense of identity for the kids, and there's much higher rates of substance abuse and incarceration and, you know, mental health issues and crime and all these things.
Well, I think there are a lot of things you can do, but I would not start with, you know, a rule saying that you can never get divorced, or a rule saying that you could, you know, never have a child out of wedlock, or
should it be up to the parent? Should you think that the, I mean, it is right now, if somebody wants to have a kid out of wedlock, they can go out and
do it. Should it be up to the government?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the thing is that,
isn't that the only other option?
The third option would be, well, for lack of a better term, it'd either be a secular or religious revival within the society would build up new standards.
Right. And that is certainly what we had before, where you're talking about the 1950s, I think.
Well, but I mean, from the beginning of the country, we had this sense that a family was a mom and a dad and a kid. And I mean, obviously, there was a much higher rate of mortality, so that
right.
broken families happened through the natural course of events.
You know, that's right. Especially in childbirth, as I'm reading, you know, more in the history, women dying in childbirth was a very common and natural thing back then. So you're right. I mean, there is a different reality in terms of, you know, people simply living longer. And I don't know, though. I mean, I think the flip side of that has always been that you stigmatize and you ostracize the children who, you know, through no fault of their own.
All right. So here's the question. Would it be better to have a society with stigmatization or non-stigmatization? Because it seems it's terribly unfair to a child that it would be labeled a bastard.
Yes.
But on the alternative, it seems like it's multiplying misery if you don't have any stigmatization, and then the society's full of bastards.
But you're stigmatizing people who have done nothing wrong is the problem.
But then you're punishing children that have done nothing wrong, because there's a lot more kids.
And I disagree with that. You're saying that being born into a either a single family home or a home of divorce is punishment.
Well, according to the statistics, it is. I'm saying that there
are ways to alleviate
this
that.
This is, by the way, this is not a moral argument. This is like public policy.
No, right. And what I'm saying is there are ways to alleviate that. Children, you know, big brothers, big sisters, boys and girls club, after school programs, Head Start programs, those kinds of things.
What percent of kids are involved in those?
I don't know.
Probably not super high. In terms of single kids or kids from single families,
so you invest in those more and you build those up.
Why not deal with the root cause?
Because the root cause is government telling you who you have to live with for the rest of your life.
No, that's
okay.
Not it.
Well, then what is it?
The root cause is that kids are being born into single families, you know, single parent families.
I understand that, and so how do you solve that?
That's my initial question. You're getting defensive because you think that I've got this set of rules, and I'm just saying, let's talk about it. We got a phone call.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show here with Walt Rubel. Who's this?
This is Aaron.
Hey, Aaron, what's up?
How about if we quit rewarding behavior that we don't want to perpetuate?
Such as?
We provide women who have a child with X amount of dollars maybe at a second one, they should get a little less rather than getting an equal check for the next child.
Right, because
the
second kid needs less to eat than the first kid. So that makes perfect sense.
Putting it out there, how do you curb the behavior?
Well, by punishing the kid.
If it's not going to stop.
By punishing the kid. That's your answer. What is your answer, Walt? It's not making the kid have less to eat. It's I gave you my answer. My answer is building up the support programs, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the after-school
program. More government.
That's my answer. You don't like it, that's fine. But your what's your answer? Taking food away from hungry kids.
Your answer means that I have to pay more for living a responsible life.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it seems to me it's a true.
Well, I'm not going to deny it. I mean, that's right. Let's be honest. But your answer is taking food away from hungry kids.
I didn't say take everything away.
No,
I
you said
take
them less.
You give them $1,000 a month.
Okay.
And the second child, you only say, okay, we're going to give you only $800 for that one. So now you got to feed both of them on $1,800 a month.
Right. So you're giving them less.
Well, should we?
Well, I'm not giving them less. The person that continues to have children is giving them less. Not me. I'm not the one having the child.
No, I understand that, but your solution.
But I'm only getting punished for that person's behavior.
Yeah. I'm not sure punishment is the right word. Like I said,
taking money out of my wallet and putting it in somebody else's isn't a reward.
It's certainly not a reward. I mean,
What is it?
What is it? It's another hungry mouth to feed is what it is. I don't know.
How do we curb behavior to not create another hungry mouth? Well, I think there have to be consequences for everybody's actions. You can't just go through life like nothing matters.
I understand.
You do whatever you want and it doesn't affect anyone.
But you're saying those consequences should be borne by the child. And that's the problem I have.
But I mean, aren't we saying that? I mean, isn't that what's happening already, one way or the other?
That's your argument.
I mean, statistically, I can prove that.
Right.
I can prove it statistically, but
I'm saying you solve that by building up the support services, and the caller is saying you solve that by taking money away from them, and I just disagree with that.
I mean, I didn't have kids because I knew I couldn't afford them, and I had them once I knew that I could afford them.
Okay,
what's wrong with that idea?
Nothing. You did it the right way.
We've got to take a break. Thanks for the call, Aaron. All right, folks. I know these are passionate topics, here's the thing. We've got kids that I mean, this is a dilemma. This is a true dilemma.
It
and
absolutely
let
is.
Let me just finish my point.
Sorry.
That you've got a situation where you can say, well, if you know the kids all need the same amount of income so that they can have the same amount of food and clothes and stuff. But you've already presumed, without really making an argument for it, that it is a societal good for the government to pay single mothers for their kids. I think we need to go back and readdress that argument so that we understand it better.
And why is it? I guess my point is we've talked about the single mother and how evil and horrible
single
she
father.
Is. Well, okay, thank you. There has been no discussion at all until just now of the father.
Well, maybe I should be taken out and horsewhipped.
Well,
but
we've
got to. Do you think I should be?
No,
we've got it. We got a phone call.
I oppose your horsewhipping.
Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Chris.
Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to add a quick point to this. That with this situation and with unwed mothers and fatherless children, this is a situation that's not going to be taken care of overnight. Yet statistically, you know, that having the family intact does help. And yes, there are situations where mothers who have fathers who are just, you know, deadbeats, they're not there, they're abusive, and so forth. But, you know, a child having a father there, you know, is very beneficial, to which, you know, I have to agree with me on that. But this is something that's going to take a period of time that has to be kind of like a, I don't want to use the word re-education, but something through, like, media, something to where, you know, where it's understood that, you know, having a father in the child's life is very important. And it's not going to be, you know, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some generational solutions. It's going to take some time to do that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Anything else, Chris?
No, thanks.
Thanks. All right, folks, let's take a little break here. And you want to come back and talk about the election, or you want to dig back down into this?
Well, let's see. We've got time for both. We can come back and figure it out.
We're here with Walt and 737, flying those friendly skies again. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be right back. And I'll tell you my opinion of Confucianism as the answer to America's problems when we come back.
If a man ever needed dying, he did. No one has the right to say what he said about you. And it's so cold and lonely.
All right, we do have a phone call here, but we've got two phone calls. This is Kelly. I'll put you on hold. This is Kelly. Who is this? Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
I got to tell you, totally forced in. I mean, Cruz has made a pact with the devil. People get a visceral reaction, a huge negative visceral reaction. It's bordering on evil. That's the only way people get this kind of a reaction, is because there's some sort of odd humanistic way where they sense the burning sulfur and the smell of the devil evilness. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And
who's, who is it's it, Ted Cruz is evil?
Well, you've got that right. I mean, just look at him. There's a lot of those people that out there that study the faces and body kinetics.
I completely agree, Frankie.
Just just look at his face. He's evil.
So here's my question. How can the Republicans start out with 17 candidates and end up with Donald Trump and Ted Cruz? How can that, how did that happen?
I think it's probably would need a psychologist to explain this. Yeah, but I think it's obviously a sense of just unrelenting, unconcerned anger. People are not thinking correctly. They're just reacting with their own emotions about how things are going. And so they gravitate to these type of people, which hold out this false sense of security, if you will, or palette of ideas that are so insane that any reasonable person would know.
Hello. I mean, I'm still getting caught up in your what was the phrenology, the study of the bumps on the head to tell what person's personality is like. Just because he's ugly,
yeah.
Hold on. Just because he's ugly doesn't make him evil.
Well, I mean, it goes. Yeah, well, that may be true. But in this case, he is the personification of evil. I mean, just look at his nose, look at his mouth. People have actually studied this and said he's got an evil-looking face.
I'm sure it was Soviet scientists. I don't know about the sulfur smell.
It's a fact. There's a bunch. I bet you ask any of your millions of listeners, Kelly, they'll probably agree with me.
Hold on. Is 523-1450 is Ted Cruz evil? Call in.
Okay.
Anything else?
I just wanted to cheer you up.
Certainly did. Thank you, Frankie.
Thanks, Frankie.
Have a wonderful day. All right, so where were we?
Ted Cruz is going to have a difficult night tonight. I think that's
he is going to have a difficult night. Thanks for the call. I'll put you on hold. Thanks for the call.
Two.
Thanks for the call. Who's this?
It's Thomas.
Thomas, yes. Good morning to you. And what's on your mind? Is this a Cruz call?
No, actually, Walt made a very poignant point there. The question bears repeating. How did the Republicans, starting with 17, end up with these two guys? The folks are fed up with Washington, and that's your Trump bunch. And then your ultra-conservative right wing, that little faction of the Republican Party, are not going to do anything except support somebody who's absolutely, completely, totally conservative. And the establishment has no excitement, no enthusiasm, nothing going on. And it's really going to be, in years to come, a study in politics. And as Frankie just said on the radio there, basically a study in psychology of how people are feeling.
I think that people are unhappy with society, therefore they're unhappy with the party. The parties are both dysfunctional. People are unhappy, and they're choosing the outsider. I mean, I don't think it's much deeper than
that. But there's way more of that on the Republican side than on the Democrat.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, Sanders, he's openly socialist. That's pretty far change.
But he's not. Go ahead, Tom.
The reason you have a little bit more on the Republican side, Walt, is because Trump chooses to use that language and fester that emotion in them. And Frankie's right with regard to a visceral response. More of a visceral response, actually, to Trump. If you understand, that's just a very deep-seated emotional response. People are very, very deeply bothered. And I'll tell you, if it ends up being Trump and Hillary, which it appears to be, we're going to have a referendum nationwide, and it's not going to be pretty, I don't believe.
Thomas, in your opinion, what are people most dissatisfied with in America?
I think at a fundamental level, the people who are supporting Trump, for example, are fed up with the fact that political correctness has gone awry. You guys were talking earlier, which was an intriguing conversation about, you know, unwed mothers, very complicated, very emotional, all those kinds of things. And people are fed up. The caller who said, you know, how come we're rewarding young right. women for having more children?
Aaron.
That's one way of looking at it.
Yep.
And, of course, Walt responded. But people are completely worn out at the point of their finances and their emotions.
Yeah, and I mean, even before he could stop himself, Walt lashed out for me not bringing in single fathers.
And rightly so, because where are these that beat that?
Well, and I mean, and
you know, I don't agree with
Thomas. I, off the air, I told, you know, Walt, I mean, ultimately the problem is with the men. If the men keep it zipped up, if they're only involved in sincere relationships, you're not going to have this like vast ocean of fatherless kids out there.
Exactly. I don't often agree with Jesse Jackson, but he did say, you're not a father when you can make one. You're a father when you can raise one.
Right.
Add to that the complicating figure, and maybe this would be not taken too well by some of your listeners, but for example, the Roman Catholic Church at least tacitly teaches and forces the issue of non birth control, and so you add to that, and that's a heavy weight.
Yeah.
People don't want to talk about it, but you talk about God. If you think will not allow you to use birth control, where are you left?
Yeah, well, I was reading, there was I got a book on the history of marriage, and in the ancient days, I mean, I say in ancient Israel, the sign of being married to someone is you had sex with them. I mean, that they were indistinguishable.
Yes.
So, I mean, if we came back and were more sincere, I think these kids that are growing up in fatherless homes, I don't care how many programs you introduce them to, that doesn't take the place of a dad.
You're probably correct. And then the other side of the issue, I have a client now, a single mother, two children. She has initiated, wanted to work, went to work, but she was making, and I quote, $47 more at the end of the month by working than by staying home.
Yeah.
She looks at me and says, I would rather stay home and take care of my kids, but the government won't let me.
Yeah.
We have to change that.
We got to have a conversation about the whole thing. Good call, Thomas. Have a good day. All right, folks, we got to take a break here, and never even really got deeply into this thing, but let's do next week. Are you going to be around?
Yeah. Tuesday, where else would I be?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd hate to speculate. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text here with Walt Rubel. We'll be right back. All right, I've got a little clip from Glenn Beck, national prophet on the race tonight.
Mistake. We are being watched. We're being watched by the whole world. But we're being watched by our Maker. And as Thomas Paine said, heaven knows how to attach a proper price to something as so sacred and celestial as freedom. It's not going to be a small price we pay, but he is asking each one of us, tell me another time in our nation's history that you have witnessed where Indiana matters, where your vote counts. Usually by the time it's the Texas, we're like, whatever. Every single state is being required, and I believe, and they're going to rip me over the culture saying it, so be it. I believe that's the Almighty God saying, each one of you, I want you to stand and you should. Are you still my people?
It's good or evil time,
yeah.
And if you are supporting the good, you're supporting Ted Cruz.
Yeah, of course.
Wow. What do you think?
What do you say to that? I mean, so God has the plan that, you know,
Trump would do really well in the Northeast, but not quite get to 1237. And so Indiana would come right into the rescue, and that is all part of God's plan for the Republican primary. That's nuts. So
it is. Yeah, I mean, Glenn. All right, so I've said I've got friends that are Mormon, and I know they hate me to the extent that they would listen to the show that I would say something like this, but it's a different religion that Glenn Beck believes in than Protestants.
Sure.
And so, how is he standing up being a prophet for Protestants?
But beyond that,
I know beyond that. So go ahead.
Well, just beyond that, the idea that. You know, the tightness of the Republican primary is all some kind of, you know, divinity. It's all God's plan that, you know, it's going to come down to some congressional district in California at the end of the race. And
well, if you're religious, you could believe that. But I just think that the way that Cruz has approached this is Beck, it's yeah. unhinged.
No, but I, you know, listen, watching this whole thing in Indiana, you've got Donald Trump with Bobby Knight and now Lou Holtz, you know, on one side, and you've got Ted Cruz with Carly Fiorina. You know, here's my running mate. I mathematically eliminated, so I'm announcing my running mate. And this whole thing where he and Casey got together and I'll give you Indiana, you give me New Mexico and Oregon. That has fallen as flat as a pancake.
As did Carly Fiorina.
Both
literally, figuratively and literally, because Carly Fiorina fell off a stage and disappeared,
right.
And Ted Cruz
came in
at that moment and didn't reach down and pick her up, and Donald Trump said, "Did you see that?"
Yeah,
even I would have picked her up.
But he starts out going to Indiana talking about shooting the ball through the basketball ring. I mean, you know. It's going to go very badly for him tonight. And I know that he and Kasich both have this idea that we're going to go to the convention and everything's going to change. But I really think after tonight, especially, we're starting to see the Republican Party for the most part.
56%.
Yeah. Coming
support
along.
Trump.
Now, the you're going to have people like Susana Martinez, who I don't think she. I don't think she's ever going to get there. And I don't think she can. I mean, I just think he has said things that to her and to her constituents are so offensive that she just cannot stand on a stage with him. She can't do any of that stuff that you traditionally.